sending messages from outer space. As many of our listeners know, this has been a big discussion on UFO programs, forums, and websites for a couple of weeks now. Wes Bateman has been our man for the latest when it comes to finding out about messages from outer space. We've worked with Wes for a couple of years now on this. In fact, we have a PDF file right here on this page of this website by Wes entitled The Tau Ceti Con Game. I recommend you, the listener, take time to read it. It's very interesting. On the line from Arizona right now, well, he's barely in Arizona, just across the border from Nevada, out in the middle of the Mojave Desert, we have Wes Bateman. And welcome to the show.
I'm just fine.
We also have Rod Davis on the line from Las Vegas. Rod's website is rodcdavis.com, so I guess I should call you RC, Rod?
Well, just don't get me mixed up with a cola.
That's right.
Okay, let's get right to this, guys. Both of you have been living with this project for years, Messages from Outer Space, the SETI case, and as usual, when we talk about these things in ufology, for the last couple of weeks, we've had conflicting reports. Some people say, who should know? Yeah, we're having messages. We're receiving messages from outer space. Others in the SETI organization are saying, no way, Jose. So I thought we would probably just get you both on the line here, and let's make an effort to clear this up.
We can help out there for sure. Well, it's... somebody is right. In 1997, I got an email from my niece, Cynthia Atkins, and said, Uncle Wes, take a look at these messages that are supposed to be fictitious. But I found them by following a link with the official homepage of the SETI Institute. Well, I printed them out as she sent them to me, and they laid on my desk for days. And eventually I did follow up and verify that there was a link from the SETI Institute to a group called the Contact Project. Now he, the fellow that was, that set up this website for the Contact Project, said that he made up nine fictitious extraterrestrial messages. And he did so as an experiment, posted them on the internet, with the idea that, to have the general public look at them and try to decipher these messages, therefore to learn ways that we might interpret the real extraterrestrial messages in the future, if we ever got any. Well, I wasn't up to playing a game or anything like that, but the messages were laying there. And I happened to look at the first page or two, and I noticed that they said that that the first two messages amounted to 37 tones, and this fellow said that the messages, that there were actually 82 tones that were separated by a particular frequency. In other words, they got higher and higher in pitch as per this frequency. Well, I have spent 40 years studying the Great Pyramid of Giza, and during that time, I isolated that the natural system of mathematics that was logically used to construct the Great Pyramid. We also found that the system was used at other ancient sites, such as Teotihuacan, Mexico, and Stonehenge, and so forth. So we knew definitely that these places were not laid out by primitives. They actually, whoever these people that laid out these ancient sites were definitely of high intelligence, because the Ra system, which is what we call it after the ancient Egyptian sun god, Amun Ra, expresses certain things such as the wavelength of the spectral lines of hydrogen, the great curves of the Giza, and so forth. Now, it's very difficult to find, believe that somebody so that's like, you know, between 2400 and 2700 BC had that kind of knowledge. So, anyway, back to so-called messages. There is, in this system, there is a table of numbers, which is called the Ra Table of Nine. They are 27, 54, 81. They're all multiples of the number 27. Now, so looking at these headings of these messages, so-called victory messages, it says there are 30 seconds. Tones were used in the first two messages. So I decided that I would assign each one of these tones a number from the Ra Table of Nine. That is the tone that they had symbolized as capital A. I said 27, capital B, 54. Now, the next thing you have to know is that this fellow divine, it had to be, believe me, if you know what we're getting out of these messages. He said that each tone lasted about 0.492 seconds. So I said, okay, the first message, if you would look at it written there, would be G, D, G, all capitals. Well, we found that the G's are neutral. In fact, G is the seventh letter in the alphabet. And we found that G would therefore be compared to the seventh period in the periodic table of Delta. So anyway, I took so the first section of the first message is G, B, G. So 54 is the only active value. So you divide 54 by 0.492. The answer was astonishing, because what you get is a number that's very close to a number well known in physics by any person that a high school physics student would probably know this number. And it's called the Rydberg constant for infinite mass. Well, that was exciting, you know. Amazing how this guy could invent the nine fictitious messages, you know, and use the Rydberg constant that way. Well, it took, of course, when I saw that, I said, no, somebody is pulling her leg here. And I went further and started applying the knowledge that we have from the pyramids. And lo and behold, we found that there were two systems, two units and time units. And so we started applying it. The second time unit is it's a 0.0493827 or so. And the next thing we must see, these discoveries can hard and long. So eventually we found that each tone had three values. For instance, A, 27, 9, and 3. B, 54, 18, and 6. T, 18, 27, and 9. So we took, now this is where it gets exciting. Now if anybody can tell me that this is a game, you know, I hang up my hat, because I don't want to live in a world with so many stupid people. Okay. So what I did is then say, okay, level one, which would be citizens divided by our 0.4938271110, gives us an answer of 12.15. Well, they had to be most intense, the wavelength, at the most intense spectral line of the element hydrogen in the Ross system is 12.15. It's an ultraviolet line, and it's also, as I say, the most intense line produced by the element. Now we take the second level, and we call D18. And divide it into, well, they also put that time unit. Now we get 36.45. Written as 364.5, this value is another constant used in equations to mathematically determine the visible spectral light to hydrogen. It's called the Balmer constant. Okay, that's 54 divided by that time unit. It says 109.35. If you write that as 1093.5 in millimicrons, it's the value of the wavelength of the passion and spectral light, which is in the infrared rate to the spectrum. Now, does this sound like a game? Of course. So, we found here that we are working with something that is real messages to receive by somebody. Now let's go to the second book, stop all this number stuff. I'll try to. We go to the second section of the first message, which would read GVPG. Well, let's just say that the third level is 54 times 54. That gives us an answer of 2,916 square units. Now, that's another number hit me right in the head. 291.0 are 2,960 cubic centimeters in the ancient Egyptian unit of measure called the Artaba. That's A-R-T-A-B-A. Just get verified on the internet. Go to Google. Punch in Artaba. It's going to give you that value. Now here we had these, know for definitely sure that these messages are written on the order of this mathematical system that I rediscovered back in 1975. And here we have the ancient Egyptian Artaba tied in with the messages. Okay, now, one more thing. The Barbary Castle Drop Formation of July 1991 in England. The outer circles, there are three outer circles, and the radius of the outer circles is 41.00625 Ra feet. Now if you look at that as millimicrons, at 410.0625 millimicrons. This is the Balmer constant spectral line of hydrogen. Now, we have also found, therefore, the same system is being used to lay out those crop circles which the extraterrestrials are responsible for. Now, before I said that each cone was separated according to the line. They were separated by 12.15 hertz. In other words, A was a certain frequency, and the next one was a multiple of that one. Well, dear friend, if you take the raw value for that frequency that each of these tones are, and you find it reciprocal, that is, divide that frequency into one, you get the amount of energy that would be produced if you converted the mass of an electron into energy by way of the equation E equals mc squared. So, no doubt, this is not the magic theory game. Now, let's go back. Okay, that's enough of that. I could go on forever. We've got thousands of cases. Now, let's understand that if these were received on 1420 megahertz, a lot of people could have picked them up. Most ham operators could pick up 1420, which is the basic hydrogen frequency. That's why the government forbids anybody transmitting on that frequency, because it is a hope of people such as SETI that if any messages are ever received from the extraterrestrial source, they're going to be on that frequency, okay? I've heard Art Bell say that he could listen on 1420 megahertz. So, the thing about this is that we are sure that Levine did not make up these messages. He said there were maybe two tone cues. No, there wasn't. There was maybe one tone cue. That means we have nine messages and 81 tones. Now, 81 is 9 times 9. So, there's a message in the message there, you know, that we're using the system based on 9, and the ROM system is definitely that. Somebody got these messages. We linked to this guy by way of the SETI homepage. Did, for instance, and I know that Rod could give you his rundown on our experiences with the National Institute for Discovery Science.
Yeah, I want Rod to get in here on the conversation too, Rod.
Okay, good. The thing here is they hired code breakers to try to do this. And there were two retired code breakers, and they threw up their hands. They couldn't do it. And they're so convinced that, in other words, their BS, the subject, that they believe the other guy's BS, so that they would never have looked for the system to interpret these messages that come out of the geometry of the Great Pyramid of Giza. That they believe the other guys when they say, oh, no, this was built by ancient Egyptians, you know. But they never would have looked there. And the other thing is that SETI don't want these to be real. First of all, the reason they don't is because they did not receive them. They could not bring these to the world. Now, Dr. Beard is right that they're being being restricted from bringing any AP messages, no matter, to the public. The thing is, SETI is looking for AP contact to come from some star system way out in the universe there somewhere.
Yeah, Rod was telling me, Wes, that you think that maybe these signals aren't coming from there at all. But
I don't think so. I think these came from inside our own solar system, you know, from the spaceship or from our moon. Well, you can't easily focus a radio telescope on a spacecraft transmitting messages while it's moving around at 1,000 miles an hour, you know. So this SETI had to recognize that, they had been knocking the reality of UFOs, for a very long time. And they don't want to look like fools, They say, this could have come from a alien spacecraft.
So basically, if I understand right, Wes and Rod, you're saying maybe both of these people are right. Greer says he has somebody inside SETI that told him that there are messages, and then the head astronomer there, he says there's no messages. And how could that be? That they're both right.
That could be both right. As we can get back to the possibility that this could be a NASA thing, we tried to do what we could to run down this guy today, this one.
Now this goes back to 75, right?
No, this would go back to 97.
Okay, 97, okay.
Yeah, I knew that these were real in 97, but we had a breakthrough in 2000 that allowed us to get a better handle on this, and we were good. See, up until then, we didn't think that there was enough data that we could bring forth to verify, prove our point. But in 2002, we did get breakthrough, and now what we're seeing would have great meaning to a physicist, because we're getting answers that pertain to such things as the permittivity constant, the permeability constant of the electricity and magnetism in free space. We're getting information that pertains to what is called the existence in free space, such things as electron mass, electron charge to mass constant. Come on, this is not a game. And if it is, this guy who wrote it would have to be a wreck. We'd have to pray to this guy. And maybe he could solve the disease crisis or something. But there is no doubt that this is beyond anybody's ability.
Now, if I understand both of you right, the Ra Research Society believes, without any reservation or doubt, that there have been 9 messages received, right?
That's correct.
And these messages were received over a decade ago.
That's right. There's a good possibility that they were received, let's say, in 1993, somewhere around there. Maybe during the time of the eclipse in Mexico, I think that might have been around the time that eclipse took place in Mexico in 1993. They must have taken at least 2 years to try to crack the imprinted, on how they were written, and they couldn't do it. I did 2 years. Then they resorted to putting them on the internet as a game to see if somebody out there might take a look at it and say, oh, I know how those are written. But that didn't happen either. And as I say, if it wasn't for the fact that we have, rejected the so-called authority saying that the pyramid was built by primitives, that we don't believe that. We started to investigate the pyramid, and that took a long time. We've been working on that since 1975, and we discovered the system. We saw how it applied to other ancient sites, and so here we are sitting with that knowledge, and then all of a sudden here comes these messages, and so we apply that knowledge to the messages, and lo and behold, it has unlocked. I don't know if anybody else that would have, could have done that. And so we're trying to get the word out here because these messages were not intended for anybody to. It belongs to the world, Jerry. You know where we're coming from. We're doing our best we can, the best we can to see that the world, everybody benefits from whatever these messages are.
Now, did I understand you that you don't have the first message completely decoded?
No, we're not. We're taking it section by section, and right now, section message one, section one, would be GBG. Next one is GBBG, then three would be, GBBG. Now, you say, well, you see, that looks so, what does anybody do with that? But once you hang the raw numbers on the values, and you say, okay, in one case it's this, you know, we're going to get the value of 54, and it's all the P's we're looking at, and then you compare the results of all three levels. What are we getting? We're getting things like the Artaba. We are getting things like what are called the first recitant, the fine structure constant score, which is an amazing number that you can physics every day.
Mm-hmm. Accompanying this program on our webpage here, we do have a PDF file in which you lay out the original message from 30 January 95, and you is much like you were just talking about, the GBG and GBBG, GBBBG, and et cetera, et cetera. It goes on and on.
Once you put the raw value, numerical value, and take into account the accurate the duration of time that each tone is, and the difference in the pitch of the frequency. You get a heck of a lot of information. They had packed a lot of data. The FBI directors had packed a hell of a lot of data into GBBG. Okay, now, as I say, as we have gone along, originally we thought there was only 5 formats. Now we're at up to 400. And 20. So we are learning as we go. And after it, we get it perfectly understood, then we can get back to the messages we get more out of
I these messages, like the third one you mentioned in your PDF report, it's 12 minutes. 42 and a half seconds long.
I think I have it here.
Yeah.
Rolling around on.
And so all the messages, you say that's the longest one, so all the messages are fairly long, I would.
The third message has over 1,500 tones in it.
Were these things designed so the first message would be easier to decipher than the second and the third?
I think so. From where we're at with it, I think so. By the time you get to the ninth message, we ought to know how to put the... What this is keeping is what we're looking for is possible medical information. You've got to be alert to that kind of thing. But right now, they're laying out basically certain things about the hydrogen atom. There is no doubt about that. They are establishing the raw values for certain constants. Then I heard, I think it was Hoagland the other day, they would use EM, electromagnetic method. Well, that's ridiculous. Of course they will. They would. We don't have any other means to receive messages from them except through telepathy and those methods, which I know are valid. But the thing here is, they dumbed this down so that people at my level of stupidity can understand it. And some of these guys know that we give a lot of credit for being intelligent because, you know, intelligent is not dumbing down enough for them. You know, so we're, you know, what does that tell you? You know, it tells me one thing, that if SETI did get these messages, they don't have anybody sitting around in the ivory hall there drinking coffee, waiting to interpret extraterrestrial messages. If they got messages, what in the world are they going to do with them? You know, they just don't have the means to interpret the messages.
Well, how, just talking about SETI again, how do you account for the two different stories there?
Well, I think what happened is that
I mean, it seems to me that Greer's...
I think that he knows of these messages.
It could be a boy of this disinformation.
Yeah, I think that he definitely knows of this information. If I was to... I would say that Dr. Greer is correct.
So in other words, the head of the astronomy section there at SETI, he lied.
Well, okay, there you go. Yes, you'd have to say so.
If you bring another fact in, too, back in 1997, Wes,
yeah.
Wasn't it then that Dr. Bruce Cornett, who was a while a deputy director of NIDS, for reasons unknown, he felt that he had to go to a certain spot in New York along the Hudson River.
Oh, you're right.
With a camcorder and a secretary, etc., and a UFO made several passes at him, and he contacted you. And what happened after that?
Okay, here's the way that went. Bruce Cornett, was deputy director under Colin Kelleher of NIDS. And we know that NIDS was funded by Robert Bigelow. Okay. Cornett, after receiving that, looked over those things that you personally delivered to NIDS. He got a hold of me. He wanted to share his experience with photographing a UFO. I think, where was it, New Jersey or New York?
It was in New York, I think.
Right. And he, Dr. Cornett's been on your show, Jerry.
Yes, and we talked about that particular thing. The first time I ever had him on, he was talking about, they didn't give me the inside baseball story, he just gave me the story about seeing the UFOs.
Well, this is what that amounts to. Dr. Cornett said that the craft turned its belly up to it, and it had a white light on the right, a white light on the left, and in the center was a red light. Now, we refer to this now as the Cornett signal. You would have a red light, which would we know is the marker that more or less says begin. And the white light would flash, and then after, now the camcorder, of course, all camcorders run at 30 frames a second. And but this was based upon, these messages are based upon 29 frames. And what we found is that these signals were not consistent. In other words, it wasn't like a strobe using an airplane, you know. Blink, 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 blink. No, this is blink. The red light would go. Then you get a white light on the left. You wait so many frames that you get a white light on the right. So I got that information. He had those particular bit of information on his website, and you probably had that. Mom must his website. But anyway, what I took note and found that in fact those messages, those flashing lights that Dr. Cornett recorded were based on the raw system of mathematics. It was spelling out what we call a rod, and the division of that rod, which is Omega right, one up. And so here we have, the link directly to that. They are definitely trying to get us to accept, to understand the raw system of mathematics so that they could give us information along those roads using that mathematical system, there's no doubt. Now, as soon as...
That sounds to me like they're trying to tell us something, maybe about hydrogen.
That's correct. I'm absolutely sure of that, Jerry. Now, Dr. Cornett's verification, that's a record now. But as soon as he let me know about it, he was fired. Bigelow said, take a walk. And that was a sudden thing. And then again, it's the way that this, we thought that this would just say, oh, this is wonderful. Let us, get on the case here and let's get these things. You know, that's not the way it turned out. The way I saw the organization, I don't mind saying this straight out, is it said that they had all the Robert Bigelow's money, and that if anybody came up with such a worthwhile investigation, he'd get behind it, and he would get to the bottom of it, and the person who started, putting them on the right track or something, would get, recognized and so forth. That's not the way they, that's not their, really not what happened. People were sending things, well, the first thing is, they say, oh, we checked this out, and it proved to be nothing. And then they start a little method of intimidation, attempting to more or less say, well, if you continue to believe in this, then you're an idiot or you're a fool. And we have PhDs here, so we know what we're talking about. I just told you there's nothing to do with this. I also heard that it was said that if people had to spend $200 to check something out, more than $200, he wouldn't do it. Now, I got that from the horse's mouth, believe me. So it's just all they were was just a way to gather information. And,
In this PDF file that we have attached, that people can go read, you lay out the tones, and you even mentioned the hertz cycles per second.
Well, what we got there, that this 18-page thing, if that could also, be obtained, with the PDF on. They'll get the picture, everybody. It's like we did with the, the UFO file show that you and Larry did. I listened to that last night. Where you recommend that a person can look at the PDF on the finding of Flight 19,
I would recommend that people check out the story of Flight 19. It seems you have something there, Wes. It is pretty evident, really, that this missing plane could be sitting out there in space, quite a distance from Earth. Wes Bateman and Rod Davis will be right back for the second half of the show, so don't go away.
My Search for the Afterlife is a book that explores real communications between a father and his deceased son. Uniquely authored from beyond the grave and co-authored in this world, the book chronicles the miraculous journey of communication beyond death. Learn more about the book, My Search for the Afterlife, visit their website at www.mysearchfortheafterlife.com. That's mysearchfortheafterlife.com.